We're in Canada for Barrick Gold's annual general meeting, their shareholder meeting, which is held in Toronto every year. And it's our fifth year of having a, well, probably the biggest presence we've had outside the shareholder meeting, trying to make the shareholders aware of Barrick Gold's human rights and environmental abuses around the world.
Tell me about the scene on the day. How many people were there?
We probably had about 200 people outside the shareholder meeting, very kind of loud, colourful group of people, which included raging grannies and a drumming group and Test Their Logic, which is young anarchist sort of hip-hop crew, and some speakers as well, which also included Jethro Tullum, who's from Porgera in Papua New Guinea, and they've been resisting against Barrick's mine there. It's their fourth time actually to Canada to make it really clear that, you know, that the abuses that are happening at their mine, they really need some urgent action from Canada to make some changes to relocate the people who live, it's about 10,000 people who live very close to the mine site, and they want those people to be relocated and compensated.
Now, you're working on this campaign mainly because of Lake Cowal in New South Wales?
Yeah, so I've been working with Wiradjuri. It's been led very much by Neville Chappell Williams, that we call Uncle Chappie, probably for about 7 years I've been working with him. But in 2006, I started to talk to people in Latin America and another woman called Sakura, who's based in the States, on an international campaign. So Sakura and I started up protestbarrick.net, and we started connecting other communities around the world who were facing, you know, many different issues around Barrick's operations on their lands, and really trying to facilitate a space and an international platform, particularly in Canada, so they could have a voice to let Canadians know what this company is doing in their lands. It's destroying their lands and their livelihoods.
I heard recently that Peter Monk tried to donate some money to a university in Canada, and there were protests against that.
Yeah, so Peter Monk, who's the founder of Barrick Gold and chairman, is a very high profile figure in Canada, and he's seen as this philanthropist, and he's made massive donations to the University of Toronto, which is, you know, a major concern of the corporatisation of the university. So a campaign sprung up, which is students and also professors, about massive donation into the development of the Monk School of Global Affairs. So they're really concerned about Monk's agenda with the university. So yeah, they had a big protest. There was over 100 people that turned up, and also Noam Chomsky, who came down to support the rally, and to sort of, you know, connect it to the sort of corporatisation of universities that are happening, not obviously in Canada, but all over the place.
Can we just take, I've got a little bit of Peter Monk himself talking, and I find him quite an amusing kind of character. We might just take a moment to listen to it.
Sure.
And then we'll come back and have some more comment.
Corporate social responsibility is not something that is done in response to Aaron Regent or in response to NGOs or in response to recent trends of fashion. It is part of our DNA. Yes, we have hospitals. Yes, we provide clean water. Yes, we provide housing.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an extract from his speech at the shareholder meeting last year. And if you actually go to the protestbarrick.net website, you can see the speech. You can see him talking. And while he's talking, we actually have different slides of the impacts of communities around the world from his operations. It was a very interesting speech he gave. It was a bit of a nutty speech, in fact, and he spent quite a bit of time talking about the campaign that is happening and the so-called NGOs who are incredibly articulate and noisy. So we felt like we were deeply complimented for our work, in fact. And of course, you know, it's a broad range of people that are involved in this campaign, very much driven by the communities who are frontline to these operations. So yes, he's an old guy now, but he still wields a lot of power. And you know, he's, some of his sort of mates, you know, include George Bush Senior. He's had lots of dealings with Adnan Khashoggi, who was involved with the Iran-Contra affair many years ago. And so, you know, when you actually dig deeper into his past, it's really interesting who he's actually associated with. So we have always made a point, because he's so high profile, to also target him. We've had a disruption at a book launch that his daughter was actually doing and he was speaking at, and our disruption closed the book launch down. So we've always, you know, been a thorn in his side, because he's so adamant that what he's doing is alleviating poverty and creating development. But unfortunately, what we're seeing and what we see from what the community show us and from what we've actually witnessed ourselves is absolutely not that case. You know, in Lake Cowal, you're seeing sacred land destroyed. In Papua New Guinea, sacred land destroyed, but also rapes and torture and forcible evictions and burning of houses. In Tanzania, a spill in 2009 has been accredited. The community there believe it killed 1,000 livestock and 40 people, and we have many photos of people with some pretty severe skin diseases, which seen quite clearly would be a result from that toxic spill, but Barrick is in denial of that, despite the fact there have been two reports connecting it. So, you know, they're a very aggressive company. They're even called within the industry the sort of piranha. So, yeah, I guess, you know, for us it's about the more we can connect communities together and find the common ground, and they can have a voice, a stronger voice together. Also, that solidarity gives them a lot more strength when they have to go back home to sort of fight it front line. So, yeah, you know, Peter Monk is definitely one of our targets in this campaign. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, it's 20 minutes after 12 o'clock. Natalie, we might go to this song now, which was performed live by Test Their Logic in Toronto, and then we'll come back and talk a bit more about Lake Cowal.
Yeah, y'all, we gotta imagine a world without gold, for real. So this is a song that we're working on. It's coming out soon. It's called Bling Is Dead. You know what I'm saying? We'll be working on a video together, and I put my verse together. So this is like the first time that I'm performing it, not like reading it. So I hope hope it goes over well with y'all. Hope y'all liking it. It's called Bling Is Dead. Check it out, y'all. Bling is murder, bling is dead. Fuck getting rich, get free instead. Bling is warfare, bling kills kids to profit mercenary mining executives. Bling is murder, bling is dead. Get that chain from around your neck. Bling is pompous, bling is toxic. Bling's killing the earth, come on y'all, stop it. We don't need no more dirty gold, 20 tons of toxic waste for every ring that's sold. Exploration, devastation, earth's getting probed by Bay Street mining companies with no soul. They want it all, pillage every last inch, blow the world to bits, turn the mountains into pits, spilling toxic waste in the rivers, killing fish, turn the water black, use a mercenary shit, and we don't even need it. It only has value cause we believe it, like the money we spend. It's all fiat, and just like money, we can't eat it, still billions starve while the mines expand. You either get displaced or die taking a stand. Colonization in every gold band, cause most gold is stolen from native land. Bling is murder, bling is dead. Fuck getting rich, get free instead. Bling is warfare, bling kills kids, profit mercenary mining executives. Bling is murder, bling is dead. Get that chain from around your neck. Bling is pompous, bling is toxic. Bling's killing the earth, come on y'all, stop it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thorell, y'all gotta check out the Mining and Justice Conference. We'll be performing at the after party. And one more time, y'all. Come on. Buried gold, your time has come. Gold investors, y'all are scum.
Buried gold, your time has come. Gold investors, y'all are scum.
Buried gold, your time has come. Gold investors, y'all are scum.
And that was Test Their Logic at the Toronto Annual General Meeting of Barrick Gold, and I've got Natalie Lowry from Friends of the Earth on the phone. Now, we've talked about Barrick Gold and their global footprint. In Australia, Lake Cowal is not the only gold mine they run in Australia, is it?
No, they've got several operating mines in Australia. Another quite significant one is the Kalgoorlie Super Pit, which is a joint venture with Newmont, and that's the largest open cut pit in Australia. Australia. It's actually massive. It's one of the biggest in the world. And the community there, you know, I've actually been out there, and the community live very close to that mine pit. And they have also themselves been trying to fight that mine for years. So, yeah, they are a notable mining company within Australia. But I guess Lake Cowal has been one of the most sort of significant campaigns, being driven by Wiradjuri traditional owners for over 10 years.
Now, Lake Cowal is an ephemeral lake. It's home to many migratory birds. I was looking last night, and there's a number of endangered species.
Yeah, so it's an ephemeral lake. It's also part of a massive floodplain.
Well, just ephemeral means that it is not there all the time.
It has a wet and dry cycle of, you know, 10 to 20 years. Mm. So for many years it was in drought. It was actually a very long drought, so the lake was dry. And I know, you know, about 4 years ago doing media and media laughing at me going, but there's no water in the lake. But that's changed now. I did a flight just before I went to Canada over the lake, and it's full. There is water everywhere. And the pit, you can actually go to the SaveLakeCowal.org website, and you can go and you can see photos of the pit. Actually, you know, it goes into the lake bed. They're also trying to expand that pit to actually go further into the lake bed. So we have, you know, major concerns that if that water rises, or if there is a big flood, because it does seem like we're going into more of a wet than sort of a dry season in that area, that, you know, there's the toxins that are there, the cyanide, the heavy metals, could contaminate those waterways. And that feeds in. You've got the Lachlan, you've got the Murrumbidgee, and you've got the Murray. So they call Lake Cowal like the heart of the Murray-Darling Basin.
I was reading last night about the cyanide leaching.
They use cyanide to leach out the gold.
So they still do use that. Sure. Yeah,
yeah,
they still,
yeah,
okay.
They do. And there was a part of the Lake Cowal campaign was actually to try and ban cyanide in the use of gold and silver mining in New South Wales. It was also joined by the Greens, but that unfortunately was unsuccessful to try and push that legislation through. But it's not just the cyanide. You're also dealing with arsenic, with mercury and other heavy metals that are of major concern to, you know, the flora and the fauna. And of course, you know, any communities maybe downstream from there, if it was contaminated, you only need small amounts of mercury and cyanide to affect humans as well. But probably one of the most significant things about this campaign is it's actually a sacred site to the Wiradjuri people. And, you know, their voice has not been listened to in they wanting to protect the site and to halt the mine and for Barrick to leave.
There were a number of court cases to do with there being sacred sites around Lake Cowal and the desecration of those sites by the company. Are any of those ongoing?
Neville Chapley Williams, on behalf of the Mooka Kalari United Families, has been, he has an ongoing legal case in the courts around native title, which is a very interesting case because it's been fought on the grounds of sovereignty, that sovereignty hasn't been ceded. So it's quite a I'm pretty sure it's one of the only native title claims that's really running on those grounds. But there's also been other legal cases which have been kind of around injunctions to, you know, and right now we're sort of getting injunctions on stopping the expansion of the mine. We just lost a recent injunction, but there's going to be an appeal. So that's sort of ongoing legal cases. And it has to be noted that these legal cases in the beginning, Neville Chapel Williams, in one of his legal cases, actually stopped the mine from going ahead for about 5 years. So the legal case has been a really significant part of it, and it has set precedence on in the path over the last 10 years. So, you know, Neville Chappie-Williams is always standing very strong, saying he will fight for his people to the bitter end. And he has a lot of supporters in Australia and, you know, also overseas that really supports his people's fight for Barrick to go home, pretty much, to leave, to rehabilitate and leave their lands.
And judging by the pictures, I've seen the pictures from your flyover, there'd be quite a bit of rehabilitation to be done.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that's a pretty big pit, and you've also got two massive tailings, which, you know, hold the toxins, so they're like about 1 kilometre by 1 kilometre. So, you know, any kind of mine operation like that would have to have a pretty intensive rehabilitation program to be able to get the land back to what it was. And unfortunately, it would never be back to what it was, because they destroyed many old trees, many sacred trees in that area for that mine to go ahead.
And yeah, the astounding thing is just how close to the water of the lake the mine is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to sort of question why, you know, there is a mine sitting in a lake bed. And, you know, as I said, the waters have really only come back, and it was really November last year when the rains hit and the lake started to fill, and the lake has filled again, and it's actually twice as much water as when we did the flight in November last year. So there's absolutely no reason why a flood couldn't come. And, you know, I've done a tour in the pit, and I've spoken to the management of the mine, and I've said, you know, where does this mine sit in terms of the flood level? And, you know, it sits below the flood level. And our concern especially is around the tailings, because we know that if a big flood came, that those tailings could so easily spill into the floodwaters. And as we've seen in Queensland with the floods, where mines have been flooded, they've just released the tailings and the toxins straight into the waterways. So, you know, it is a major concern. It's a big farming community around there. While some people might see it as not being populated, it's actually, you know, that area is a food bowl for New South Wales.